Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lynn, Shanning and Roshan. Now, in about half an hour, we'll be speaking with Professor Azmi Hassan, a political analyst at University Technology Malaysia on Amanah. But in the meantime, let's talk about how expensive everything is. Now, we've been running a poll this morning on the BFM Twitter account asking you, after considering your cost of living, how much of your income are you usually able to set aside? So the results have been pretty mixed. Do let us know what you think. And the reason why we're talking about this is because, discussions on the ever-increasing cost of living has been at the forefront in Malaysia, and we're all feeling the pinch. But what is behind this perception of the rising cost of living? So that's what the World Bank is looking to investigate in its recent Malaysia Economic Monitor.
Yes, the report was released yesterday and entitled Making Ends Meet, and its findings indicate that the cost of living pain points have less to do with inflation and more to do with other factors like income growth and financial well-being.
So for more insight from the report, we speak to Kenneth Simler, senior economist with the World Bank. Thank you very much for joining us, Kenneth. Now, Malaysia has had consistent low inflation, averaging at less than 2% since 2015 and moderating to less than 1% since 2018. And yet higher prices are a common complaint among Malaysians. What's going on here?
That's a very good question, because you're right. Consumer price inflation has been quite low in Malaysia for the last 4 or 5 years, and when you hear about or think about cost of living, I think most people immediately think of, oh, prices must be rising very fast, and that has not been the case. Certainly, you can point to specific items like certain types of fish where the price has been going up, food prices in general, and food away from home has risen a bit faster than average inflation, and that affects lower-income households a bit more because they spend a higher proportion of their household incomes on food. But as we looked at it closer and closer, we just said this is not one of the major drivers of cost of living concerns in Malaysia. It's actually a much broader question for households and as they try to make ends meet and satisfy their needs and on their incomes that they have.
So, Kenneth, if inflation isn't the reason for higher cost of living, what are the factors contributing to this perception of being left behind?
So we started by taking kind of a household-centric approach, how do households try to make ends meet? Where are the pain points in terms of cost of living, especially if inflation is not one of the major ones? And so we identified lagging income growth as being an issue, rapidly increasing prices on housing, and including faster than incomes in recent years, and the shortage of affordable housing for many households, and also the financial well-being of households, and whether it's their indebtedness or their financial literacy or savings for emergencies or for retirement.
Now, the report highlighted some interesting findings regarding slow income growth and which segments are particularly affected by this. What else did the research reveal?
So one thing that we did in this report that I haven't seen done elsewhere is to break out employment income growth by different age groups. It's done somewhat in some Dawson reports, but not over the time series that we have. And one of the really remarkable things was that for younger workers, those young job entrants, those in their 20s, age 20 to 29, while it's to be expected their incomes are going to be lower than those of older workers who have more experience, the more striking thing was how the growth of that income has been very slow over the years. It's from 2004 to 2016, it was only about 1% per year. Also, the incomes of less educated workers, those who have only finished secondary school as opposed to having tertiary education. Again, we expect, because of the correlation with income and education, that they will have lower wages, but the growth of those wages has also been much slower. And whereas in some cases, some other countries, some other studies, you see that those with lower wages, they may have a faster growth rate to catch up a little bit. Here, they're actually diverging. So one thing you're seeing here that I think affects people's perceptions of cost of living is that their incomes are actually falling behind relative to that of their older coworkers, older and more experienced coworkers.
And that's not the only segment feeling the pinch from lower wage growth, right? How does this affect those from lower income groups?
Overall household income among the B40 actually grew quite rapidly from 2009 to 2014. The income growth rates were faster than for the M40 or the D20. But then in that 2014 to 2016 period, suddenly things flattened out a bit. They were still having income growth, but it was slower than for the M40. So there was a slight increase in inequality. And I think most of all, people seeing that their incomes weren't as growing fast as maybe they'd gotten used to expecting them to grow. So here you see maybe a disappointment compared to people's expectations or aspirations on how their incomes are growing now compared to how they were a few years ago. So there's both the over time and then also comparing to neighbors. And I should mention that the data in the report on incomes only goes up through 2016 because that's the most recent household income survey that's been completed. The 2019, they're just wrapping up the data collection work now, and we look forward to having those results by the middle of 2020.
So, Kenneth, what do these findings reveal about the state of income inequality in Malaysia?
Well, a big question here is whether you mean absolute or relative. So relative meaning how are lower household incomes as a ratio or as a percentage of higher household incomes. And relative inequality in income has been declining steadily in Malaysia, not as long as they've been collecting, as long as data has been collected on this. During that time, then that means that the B40 are getting a larger share of a growing economic pie. However, even though their growth rates and those ratios are looking more favorable for low-income households and for B40, the absolute income gaps, the number, you know, how many ringgit it is between the T20 and the B40 or the T20 and the M40, that's been increasing steadily over time. And that's fairly normal in any growing economy. So you have this situation where relative income inequality was steadily decreasing until 2014, 2016, whereas absolute income inequality has gone up. And neither of them is a right or a wrong one. More important than that diversion is because of the increase in absolute income gaps, so the increase in absolute inequality, that's another, I think, reason why people perceive they may be falling behind.
Now, in your view, what are the possible policies that the government should be pursuing to address this income gap and cost of living issues?
So in the short term, I think some of the initiatives in the 2020 national budget could be promising, especially the Malaysians at work. And within that, the graduates at work, the women at work, and apprentices at work. So those focused at women and younger workers, where they have income subsidies for both the worker and for the employer. So for the worker, that's for up to 2 years. For the worker, that's a direct income boost. And for the employer, it's a little bit of incentive to maybe give some of these younger workers who don't, most of them don't have that much experience, but for them to take a chance on them and see how they can perform and to also invest in their training. Also in the short term, the social safety net programs such as Bantuan Sara Hidup, the cash transfer scheme, that could be deepened. Right now, the benefits are low relative to household incomes, so they don't have much of an effect on incomes, and those could be increased. Over the longer term, increasing employment income really has to be based on growth in labor productivity. Because if you just tie wage increases to inflation or to some other measure of the cost of living, you could actually create inflation. So you want to make sure that there's growth in productivity that's supporting wage increases going forward. So tying it to productivity and also realigning, and again, this is longer term, realigning investment and hiring incentives towards economic upgrading and stimulating the creation of high quality jobs by the private sector.
Thank you so much, Kenneth, for your insight. And that was Kenneth Simler, senior economist with the World Bank, talking to us about the results of their research into the cost of living here in Malaysia. And also, I mean, he highlighted some of the policies that the government has instituted or introduced in Budget 2020. So he's positive about the at-work initiatives, but also just highlighted things like social protections in order to give those lower income brackets a bit more of a safety net.
Yeah, I think against this backdrop, where yesterday the World Bank also reduced their GDP forecast for Malaysia 2020 from 4.6 to actually 4.5%. So it's going to be slightly probably a tougher year next year if we just look at this from a macro number point of view. But yes, I think for us Malaysians, the cost of living, whether it's imagined or it's not imagined, it's real. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are cost of living pressures. Number one, of course, you said is housing, because the price of houses have gone up a lot. And as we know, that's the biggest chunk of anyone's income when it comes to repayment of the loans. There's also this sense that wages aren't going anywhere. If anything, they're stagnated. And what's really worrying is that the wages have stagnated for the people that need it the most. So you're talking about the B40s, the young millennials who are just starting out in life. And for them, there's, you know, what options do they have?
I guess this also ties into this larger issue of growth for the nation, right? Because 10, 20 years ago, we had a lot more growth happening and incomes grow. And yes, we went through 97, but overall, incomes felt like they had more bite to them, that you could buy more with less. And today we are seeing that growth stagnate, and we're all looking to the government or to our leaders for where is that next economic growth going to come from? What are the next businesses that are going to boom and bring jobs with them and all of that? We tried automotive back in the day, and now we're bringing it back for some reason. Shouldn't we be doubling down on Industry 4.0, but have a tangible plan? How are you going to bring these people in? How are you going to set up industries?
How are you going to train the existing workforce in order to deal with it?
Yep. Yeah, surveys that say we're going to see 5% growth in wages next year. But that's very selective. That's very for those high-tech jobs, those digital savvy jobs. So like she pointed out, Shaoning, or like Ken pointed out, actually, the growth at the lower end is not going to be there. 1% per annum is tiny.
It is. And so we have also been running a poll on the subject of cost of living on the BFM Twitter account. That's at BFM Radio, asking you, after you considering your cost of living, how much of your income are you usually able to set aside? So of the 60-odd votes we've received, 32% just said just a little bit, and they are the majority. Do continue to tell us what you think. But right now we're heading into the 7:30 news. And after that, a look at HSBC, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.